Open your Bibles, please, to Genesis 24. And the first few verses in that chapter describe the situation better than I can even explain it. Let's read it. Let me read them to you. Genesis 24, beginning in verse 1. Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house, that ruled over all that he had, Put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I will make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but thou shalt go unto my country and to my kindred and take a wife unto my son Isaac. And then look on over, please, to verse 10. The servant took 10 camels of the camels of his master, departed, for all the goods of his master were in his hand, and he arose and went to Mesopotamia unto the city of Nahor. That was many hundreds of miles. And he made his camels to kneel down without the city by a well of water at the time of the evening, even the time that women go out to draw water. And he said, O Lord God of my master Abraham, I pray thee, send me good speed this day and show kindness unto my master Abraham. Behold, I stand here by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city come out to draw water. Let it come to pass that the damsel to whom I shall say, Let down thy pitcher, I pray thee, that I may drink. And she shall say, Drink. And I will give the camels drink also. Let the same be she that thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac. And thereby shall I know that thou hast showed kindness unto my master. Came to pass that before he had done speaking, behold, Rebekah came out, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, with her pitcher on her shoulder. And the damsel was very fair to look upon, a virgin. Neither had any man known her. And she went down to the well and filled her pitchers with water. It again came up. And the servant ran to meet her and said, Let me, I pray thee, drink a little water of thy pitcher. She said, Drink, my lord. And she hastily let down her pitchers upon her hand and gave him drink. And then going on down, verse 21, the man wondering at her held his peace, to wit, whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not. Came to pass as the camels were drinking that the man took a golden earring, half of a shekel weight, two bracelets of her, for her hands, and 10 shekels weight of gold, and said, Whose daughter art thou? Is there room in thy father's house for us to lodge in? She said unto him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, which she bare unto Nahor. She said moreover unto him, We have both drawn provender enough and room to lodge in. The man bowed down his head and worshipped the Lord. And he said, Blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who hath not left destitute my master of his mercy and his truth. I, being in the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren. I, being in the way, the Lord led me. In order to get directly to the final application of everything I want to say tonight, I want you to notice how the old servant's heart is directed three different directions. First, up to God. The Lord God of my master Abraham. And then second, out back, across, to Abraham his master. First to God, and second to Master Abraham. And that would have to do with the elders and the pastors from this congregation who keep sending you and me and many of us out in many different missions. And then third, He turns to himself as the messenger that the Lord is sending out. The Lord led me. The Lord led me. Being in the way, the Lord led me. To the exact place, and the exact people, and the exact time. I, being in the way, the Lord led me. 50 years ago. That's the picture of the old servant here. I didn't know how to do it. I did not know how to develop churches. I did not. I wanted Jesus to do that because he said, I will build my church. I wanted him to use me in doing that, but I didn't know how to do that. I'd never seen somebody else doing that. It just kept getting into the Lord's way, and he bumped me around and put me in the exact place that he needed to put me in at the exact time when Rebecca and her family were right there in order to accomplish his will to provide that beautiful wife for Isaac. God taught me the meaning of these words very early in life, the hard way, getting in the way. My mother died when I was 3 years old. And there were 5 others in the family. And they loved me. I knew that. They had named me for my father, Roy. I was Roy Jr. up until the time that he died. They loved me. And my sister, after my mother's death, saw that there was going to need to be more help at home. So she quit high school in order to come home and take care of me. They loved me. But there were 2 farms that Dad was farming, and he was a veterinarian. And with all these children, that meant that there were, the added problem. I was always getting in the way. One of my brothers once told me about how they were clear out of the baby business, and then I was born. And they had to turn around and find diapers and baby clothes and start all over again. And I can still hear my brothers saying, "Get out of my way! I've got to get this milk back to the cooler. I've got to get this feed down to the cows. I've got to get this work done in the garden. Get out of my way! I've got to get this milk done." And so Dad called his sister, who was my aunt, who had been teaching school back in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, and not for 20, 30 some years. And she actually quit teaching school in order to come back home and take care of the baby, to take care of me. She poured her life into me. I knew too well how to get in the way, and she showed me then how to translate that problem into a blessing, how to get in the way of God. She did that primarily by teaching me to memorize the scriptures that a few years later would save my life in the South Pacific. 15 years later, on the aircraft carrier, the Petroff Bay in the South Pacific. I was 19 years old then, and the captain had made me navigator of that aircraft carrier the day I stepped on it. And that's what we know, and we've sung it, of course, so many times. You know the words. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day utter speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. What does God mean by that little word line? My aunt had taught me to hear those words as God's words down to me. Now, 10 or 12 years later, I was a navigator on that aircraft carrier in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. faced with a serious, how do you find a place for an airplane to land in the middle of thousands of miles of water? A landing strip in the middle of the ocean, a few hundred feet long. The pilots, and they had taught me at one time to be a pilot, learned to stall the plane instead of roll it down. They stalled the plane when it came down. But how to find the place, even with 100 feet in the middle of the Pacific? The Navy taught me to read the voices of the sun and the moon and the stars. I had to know three things. I had to know the name of the star that I was shooting on, or the moon, of course, or sun. I had to know the name of that star. Second, I had to know the exact minute that I was taking that sight. And third, I had to know the exact angle between where I was down there on board that ship and that star up there. And knowing those three things then, the figures came out. Out of that would come the line of position. That's what it was called. That's a nautical term for it, a legal term. The line of position from each one of those stars, or the sun, the moon. Two stars in the sun or the moon, three stars, three lines of position. This one over here, this one here, and this one here. And where there's three lines crossed in the middle of the Pacific Ocean was precisely where that aircraft carrier was, within a quarter of a mile. Those words that God had written in Psalm 19 came to have new meaning. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. So our pilots would not have to splash and be drowned. After a hard mission, where would they ever find a place to land in the middle of the Pacific Ocean? And later on, after the bombs had been dropped, we had captured two Japanese planes. We'd bring them back to the stateside so that our pilots would know what their planes could do, how fast they could climb, how quickly, how directly they could dive, that our planes would understand their planes. I'd been down there rummaging around several times in the planes, and the thought had occurred to me, you know, if we could just, they had the same navigational instrument. If we could just jam the stars, we had jammed the radio, they never would have a chance. Every time they took off from an aircraft carrier, they would drown. I couldn't read the navigation, the Japanese language, but I could read those navigational instruments. They were using the same ones. But God had forbidden that we would ever jam those stars for them. In verse 3 there is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard, and their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. Now fast forward more than 20 years, and I being in the way, I still have a way of getting in the way. The Lord is still leading me. Jesus had used us in his building of churches inside the state of Indiana. There were two churches in Indianapolis, and then there was Muncie, and then there were three or four other places. But people were beginning to call them our churches, your churches, his churches, her churches, and worst of all, Roy's churches. And I tried to stop it. I said, I didn't do that. Jesus did that. All I did was preach the word, and he did the building. Jesus had said, I will build my church. Again, I realized that I was getting in the way, getting in his way. Came to the conclusion that I'd have to resign. get out of here. And then people would know that this church had not been built by any one person, but that it had been built by him. And the elders were older and wiser, and they got hold of me and said, "No, Roy, don't resign. Take a year's leave of absence." And Bill and Beth and Bob, our children, were ready to leave home to go to college. And I had preached over and over again that children need to be ushered out into the world. But I'd still run into those families who were holding their children tight, just can't let you out into that old, cold, evil world. I've got to hold you at home. And then there were the other couples, the other families, dads and mothers. How soon are you going to get out of here? And between those two possibilities, there was the possibility that maybe God intended us to take those precious children out and show them that wherever they went in his world, he was already there to protect them and to guide them and to direct them. And so, the five of us, Margie, Roy, Bill, Beth, Bob, drove east out of Indianapolis on I-70 and then north into Canada, where we parked the old car and flew across to Brussels, where we found a Volkswagen camper that was to be our home for the next 14 months, a little over a year. And we found that Jesus kept using us in his way. That's the American family that's parked over there. We learned that people were saying in all the countries that we stopped in all through Europe. That's the American company. And there were those who came close enough to hear that in the morning we were singing together and we were praying together. And they wanted to ask us, and we had an opportunity to share the gospel with them. We found Jesus kept using us. And we went through Europe and introduced the children to the historical and geographical and Reformation places of importance, not only on the continent, but also back up into England, and then Scotland and Ireland, where the children had started school while I was back at the University of Edinburgh. One other incident stands out in my mind as an evidence that God was keeping us in his way to put us in the exact place at the exact time with the exact person that he had sent us to speak to. People who wanted us to help. Bill and Beth had already flown back. Their first year of college was underway. And Margie and Bob and I drove down through Europe to Ankara, Turkey, where I was to speak at an underground church meeting. Government didn't tolerate those people in the underground church. They were illegal. And they were hungry to learn about the unlimitedness of Christ's kingdom. And we found that Jesus was teaching them. That's why he had us there. And he was teaching them about the unlimitedness of his kingdom and what he would do, even though their churches were underground. And the police didn't like all this. It was undercover in the middle of the city of Ankara, but it was undercover there. Several hundred people from the underground church ministered to them there, teaching them the doctrine of the kingdom. And then we escaped the police. My passport had written on it someplace in there, "Minister." And when they went to review it at the Syrian border, Turkey and Syria, there's still these kinds of things that are going on in Syria today. But when they went to review my passport there, they just noticed the word "minister." And they came to the wrong conclusion, the officers there, that I was a minister of government. And I didn't go ahead and re-enlighten them on the subject. And we went straight on in. I was trying to find the school, the American school, which was the Reformed Presbyterian Church in Latakia. Some of you may call it Latakia. You see it in the news these days. There's some of the same problems going on in Syria today. And we came to the city of Latakia or Latakia at night. It was raining. And we stopped at a hotel. We never stayed at a hotel because we had the camper in the tents. But I needed to find somebody who would speak English. And so we told them what it was that we needed. We need to find the American school. That's what the church building in Latakia had been called. And I had been there a few years earlier with Harold Harrington, Bob Tweed. When we'd gone down through there, I'd seen the church there, and I'd known the pastor and some of the family. But it was late at night, and it was raining, and the people at the hotel said, yes, we'll find a boy. And so they found a boy, and as soon as he got in, I gave him some money. I should have kept that money until later. I discovered afterwards. But he jumped in, and then he showed us in the middle of the night how to drive down through that big city, Latakia, and pulled up in front of this huge building, all right. But he jumped out and ran away. I couldn't do anything about it. And we were alone in that city at that time of night. And there wasn't anything else to do. I got out of the camper and walked up the walk towards the big building. And I knew it couldn't be the American school because there were no trees there. And when we had been there before, there were huge trees all around that big building. But now as I looked in through the windows at the ground floor, I could see that it was occupied by soldiers. And they were partying, as only soldiers can do. And all the bottom of the building was surrounded by barbed wire. I couldn't get close to it. And I went around to the back, and sure enough, there was a stairway that went up to the third floor, a tall building, to the third floor. And I walked up that stairway in the middle of the night and banged on the door. And the door opened, and the searchlight hit me in the eyes. I couldn't see anything except that it was a little girl who had opened the door. And all I could say was American school, because even the Syrian people understood those words back in the days when we've been there before. American school. I was trying to tell them what I was trying to find. And the little girl screamed and ran back around the corner, and a minute later, something else came out from around the corner, and it had a skirt on, and I realized it was a lady, and she stared at me. And then she screamed, and she said, Roy Blackwood, how did you get clear over here? And the minute she spoke, I knew. I said, a D.B. Awad. Her daddy had been the pastor there. And Margie and I had known her at Geneva College. She was a friend of ours. And she explained to us. We went back out and got Margie and Bob and went up there that night and spent the night with them. Old Pastor Awad was there. He had been imprisoned by the soldiers, and so had the family. But instead of trying to find another place for them, they just put them in prison on the third floor. And he was very sick. He was getting ready to die. He died only a short time after that. We sat there that night, and she told us about how she'd been crying all day under arrest from those soldiers, and with her father dying. We probably were the last people to sing with him and pray with him before he died. And the right place at the right time with the right person, I being in the way, the Lord led. And that's the way he'll do with your life. We didn't have communion with him in the formal sense of the word there that evening, but in the informal sense of the word we did. And it was a blessed evening. I don't know where Adebi is today. I've asked several people from over there. They said she's dead. Was she killed? Nobody seems to know. But I, being in the way, the Lord led. God led us. From there, the next day, and we couldn't stay more than a day, there was fighting going on. But God rescued us through that, down to Beirut. And I wanted to see what was going on over in Cyprus, because Ken Smith and his family had lived there. And Bob was to have gotten off there and lived with them for the remainder of the time that Margie and I were driving on around the world. But at World Congress on Evangelism at Lausanne, Ken Smith had come all the way up to that conference, and we were up there with him. And I was there one morning when Ken stopped the car as I pulled into the parking lot, and he went this way. I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Roy, the Turks attacked Cyprus yesterday. And there's fighting going on there, and Floy and the family are being airlifted out today to Beirut. There won't be any place for your son to stay." And I wanted to see that island and what was going on there. Another one of the reasons for it was that one of the scholars from over there at the school in Cyprus, Reformed Presbyterian school there in Cyprus, had come to Bloomington, Indiana, to Indiana University, to do his doctoral degree work. And while he was there, he became very sick. And Margie and I moved him into our little parsonage home. And lo and behold, he became well. But he made me swear that if he died, we wouldn't allow him to be buried in the United States, but would send his body back to Cyprus. And we did. Now, we got over there. There wasn't any place else to stay. And we got into his home. That's where we stayed there. I, being in the way, the Lord led me, led us, Roy and Margie and Bob. And we flew down from, after going down through the desert, and as we came out of, I could go on for many, many minutes, hours, perhaps, telling about other things that took place. The pirates caught us as we were going out of Kuwait to go up the Tigris-Euphrates River to get over to see people in another country up there. And the captain paid them off, and they didn't use the guns on us that they had brought on board when they stopped the little boat that we had the camper on. And down through India, we were encouraged by the church then in Australia. We shipped the camper back across to California and then flew down to Australia. And then flew back across the Pacific to pick up the camper in California. And came driving back into Indianapolis on I-70 from the west. We'd driven out of it going east. Now, a little over a year later, we came driving back. It really is round. It takes people, some people a little bit longer to realize that. And the psalm that we sang there that day, as we came back to the congregation, is the one that you sang here. The Lord brought Zion's exiles back. We were as men that dreamed. Our tongues were filled with melody. Our heart with laughter teemed. The Lord has done great things for us. And we rejoice indeed. On Monday, after greeting the congregation, making a brief report in here, we got back into the camper and drove on east on I-70 to arrive at the old farm in Ohio just in time to talk to my father one last time before he died. Timing is too perfect. No person could have arranged that. I being in the way, the Lord led. First, blessed be the Lord who is doing it all, who is doing all this, and who is sending you and me out, the elders and the pastors here, for sending you out to wherever he wants you to be, at the exact time that he wants you to be there with the exact people that he's already prepared for you. He is sending them out. And to you who keep on sending us into Christ's world to find a wife for his son. Oh, that God would use us to build other churches. Yet today, that's not too late. He's still in the church building business. A church that Christ is building. And then, I being in the way, the Lord led me. He does that kind of thing with the individual. He does that with you. He meets with you. And the personalness of that comes to a head here in the communion service here. It is, take my bread and take my blood into your body. And it goes down into the digestive systems and then goes out into all other parts of our body. And it's Christ in us. Came to pass as he sat at meat with them, he took bread and broke, gave to them, their eyes were opened that they knew him. Only Jesus could do all that. He is with us here tonight, and he is sending us out into his world to meet the people that he wants us to meet at the exact time that he wants us to meet them. I'd like to sing again, and this will be Psalm 127, Psalm 127a. Unless the Lord build up the house, its builders build in vain. The sermon that I preached the day we left here was is expedient for you that I go away. God spoke through that sermon, and you realized that I was not essential. And after that, God used the church in the building of there are 9 churches around here now that God has used you in building. But please remember, it is Jesus who said, I will build my church. And every one of them is a church that he has built. We didn't do it. He did it. He used us. He used us. As we give ourselves to him, he will keep on using us. But it is he who does the building. And we don't know enough how to do that. And then this 127th Psalm. Unless the Lord build up the house, its builders build in vain. Unless the Lord the city guards, its watchmen watch in vain. And it's the family psalm. It's a psalm that Margie loved very much as we saw our children going out. And maybe this will frighten you so much that you wouldn't dare to do it. As you remember that my oldest son is not on this side of the Atlantic Ocean anymore. He married a Scottish lady and is living over there in Scotland. And my daughter married a Scots man and is living over there on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. And showing the children that God will take care of them no matter where they go into his world, and use them in the accomplishment of his purposes, sometimes leads to the family being divided. But it's he who's doing it. Unless the Lord build up the house, its builders build in vain. Unless the Lord the city guards, its watchmen watch in vain. How vain to work long days, late hours, to eat with toil and cares. For even so his loved ones sleep, this gift with them he shares. One's sons are gifts, the Lord's reward. By him the womb bears fruit. The children of one's youth are like the arrows warriors shoot. How happy is the man who has his quiver filled with these. They'll bear no shame when at the gates they speak with enemies. Let's rise to sing, please.